Well, we're all ready to the fifth judge, and his name is Gideon. We are looking at chapter 6 of the Judges, and we left off talking about Gideon and how God chose him. He was a common man, a farmer, and God chose him to help his people to overcome a nation of people called the Midianites that had come into Israel and attacked Israel. And God helped Gideon, this common man, to lead the people. And he told Gideon that he would defeat the Midianites as a single man himself. And Gideon was the type of man that we can see was a believer in God and served God. And yet God went to him and strengthened him through a number of different signs and miracle to show him that he was with him, gave him confidence. First of all, an angel came to him in the beginning to tell him that he would be serving God and defeating the Midianites. And Gideon believed him, and this angel, he performed a miracle before him. And also God gave Gideon another miracle in which we remember he asked God to give him a sign, and God made the fleece wet and the ground dry, and then the fleece dry and the ground wet with dew, which showed Gideon that he was with him. This gave Gideon the strength to, first of all, oppose the idol worshipers that were in his area, his town, and even his father, who was an idol worshiper. And in chapter 6, verses 25, we can see that Gideon said, the Lord, it says, "Now it came to pass the same night that the Lord said to him, 'Take your father's young bull, the second bull of 7 years old, and tear down the altar of Baal that your father has, and cut down the wooden image that is beside it, and build an altar to the Lord your God on top of this rock in the proper arrangement, and take the second bull and offer a burnt sacrifice with the wood of the image which you shall cut down.' So Gideon took 10 men from among his servants and did as the Lord had said to him. But because he feared his father's household and the men of the city too much to do it by day, he did it by night." Yet this gave Gideon the strength, the fortitude to go out and stand against these idol worshipers. And his father eventually backed him and was favorable to him in doing this. And Gideon took strength from this to be able to do what God wanted him to do. Further on down there, in verse 33, it says, "Then all the Midianites and Amalekites, the people of the east, gathered together, and they crossed over and encamped in the valley of Jezreel. But the Spirit of the Lord came upon Gideon. He blew the trumpet, and the Abiezerites gathered behind him. And he sent messengers throughout all Manasseh, who also gathered behind him. He also sent messengers to Asher, to Zebulun, to Naphtali, and they came up to meet them." So Gideon formed this large group of men. It says that there were 32,000 men that came from those four tribes to gather together to fight the Midianites who had come in. They had not been a part of Israel or in Israel. If you see on your map, you can see where the Valley Jabbok is on the map. And they came from east of the eastern part of Israel, on the eastern side of the Jordan, came into Gad and to Manasseh and followed the Jabbok River, which is right in the middle of this map, and then went on up in and came up into the Jezreel Valley and camped there. And they were going to take over as much of the area, much of Israel, as they possibly could. And they were ready to fight. But God told Gideon, 32,000 men, if you remember the story, God said 32,000 men are too many. If I let you have 32,000 men to fight these Midianites, you're going to think you did it on your own. So I want you to tell the people of Israel that if you don't want to fight, if you're not ready to fight this army, then go home. And we can see that there was a number of things happened concerning this. If you look at chapter 7, first of all, when Gideon told the people, if you don't want to fight, you can go home, 22,000 of them turned and left. They didn't care to fight. All right. So he's left with 12,000 or 10,000 men, okay? In chapter 7, verse 4, it says, "But the Lord said to Gideon, the people are still too many. Bring them down to the water, and I will test them for you there. Then it will be that of whom I say to you, this one shall go with you, the same shall go with you. And of whomever I say to you, this one shall not go with you, the same shall not go." So he brought the people down to the water, and the Lord said to Gideon, "Everyone who laps from the water with his tongue, as a dog laps, you shall set apart by himself. Likewise, everyone who gets down on his knees to drink." And the number of those who lapped, putting their hand to their mouth, was 300 men. But all the rest of the people got down on their knees to drink water. Then the Lord said to Gideon, "By 300 men who lapped, I will save you and deliver the Midianites into your hand. Let all the other people go, every man to his place." So we can see here that Gideon ends up with 300 men. Now the important thing to remember here is that the Valley of Jezreel, where the Midianites had camped, was a camp that contained 135,000 men. And so Gideon had to face this army of 135,000 who had come up for the very reason to fight with 300 men. And this shows us a very great amount of faith that Gideon had. And he continued to be strong. But even though he continued to be strong, God gave him another sign and told him that if he would go down with his servant, if he was needing of a servant, but he said, sneak down to the Valley of Jezreel and look at this camp of these men and sneak down at night and look at them closely, and I will show you a sign. So in chapter 7, verse 9, that he is sent, "And it happened on the same night that the Lord said to him, arise, go down against the camp, for I have delivered it into your hand. But if you are afraid to go down to the camp with Purah, your servant, and you shall hear what they say, and afterward your hands shall be strengthened to go down against the camp." Then he went down with Purah, his servant, to the outpost of the armed men who were in the camp. Now the Midianites and the Amalekites, all the people of the east, were lying in the valley as numerous as locusts, and their camels were without number, as the sand by the seashore in multitude. Then when Gideon had come, there was a man telling a dream to his companion, and he said, "I have had a dream. To my surprise, a loaf of barley bread tumbled into the camp of Midian. It came to a tent and struck it so that it fell and overturned, and the tent collapsed." Then his companion answered and said, "This is nothing else but the sword of Gideon, the son of Joash, a man of Israel. Into his hand God has delivered Midian and the whole camp." So we see here another sign in this story. And in verse 15 it says, "And so it was when Gideon heard the telling of the dream and its interpretation that he worshipped. He returned to the camp of Israel and said, 'Arise, for the Lord has delivered the camp of Midian into your hand.'" Can you imagine the faith that this man had to say such a thing and to see this sign and to, what did he do? He worshipped. He had complete and total trust in God's helping them to overcome this great battle that they were about to get involved in. 300 against 135,000. In verses 16 through 23, it talks about the battle. And if someone would like to read part of this, I'd appreciate it. 16 through 18. All right, Taylor. All right, 19 through 23. "So Gideon and the 100 men who were with him came to the outpost of the camp at the beginning of the middle watch, just as they had posted the watch, and they blew the trumpet and broke the pitchers that were in their hands. Then the three companies blew the trumpets and broke the pitchers they held in the torches in their left hands, and the trumpets in their right hands for blowing, and they cried, 'The sword of the Lord and of Gideon.' And every man stood in his place all around the camp, and the whole army ran and cried out and fled. Then the 300 blew the trumpets, and when the 300 blew the trumpets, the Lord set every man's sword against his companion throughout the whole camp, and the army fled to Beth Acacia toward Zerah, as far as the border of Abel Meholah by Tabith. And the men of Israel gathered together from Naphtali, Asher, and Manasseh, and pursued the Midianites. Then Gideon sent messengers throughout all the mountains of Ephraim, saying, 'Come down against the Midianites and seize from them the watering places as far as Beth Barah and the Jordan.' And all the men of Ephraim gathered together and seized the watering places as far as Beth Barah and the Jordan. And they captured two princes of the Midianites, Oreb and Zeeb. They killed Oreb at the rock of Oreb, and Zeeb they killed at the winepress of Zeeb. They pursued Midian and brought the heads of Oreb and Zeeb to Gideon on the other side of the Jordan." The men of the other tribes that had been sent home or had been let go, turn and return to pursue the Midianites to help Gideon, and the ones that were fleeing back across the Jordan, back to their homeland, and they captured them and killed them. And as I said before, 135,000. There were the way the Bible talks is there was not any left at the end. This was a great blessing on the people of Israel, and the people looked to Gideon for his great leadership. And even though this common man was not a military man, as we see, the people gathered around him and they followed after him and wanted to do what was in his heart and follow after the Lord. In chapter 8 now, we can look and see that the people want Gideon to become their ruler, become their judge. And he is willing to rule over them. But in chapter 8, verse 23, we can see that Gideon made the famous statement to them, about ruling over them. And he says in verse 23, in verse 22 beginning, "Then the men of Israel said to Gideon, 'Rule over us, both you and your son and your grandson also, for you have delivered us from the hand of Midian.' But Gideon said to them, 'I will not rule over you, nor shall my son rule over you. The Lord shall rule over you.'" Gideon was trying to make a statement here, a point, that the people of Israel were not letting God rule over them. And they were a people that were needing of God's help. We can see this great story of Gideon by looking from the very beginning to the very end of his life and seeing that Gideon started in his own home to make sure that the idol worshiping and the error and the sin that was going on in his own home was taken care of before he went out anywhere else. And then he was willing to do whatever he could to help others to try and serve the Lord. Now, Gideon did serve the Lord as a judge for many years. And he was a very good, strong judge, one of the best. But it says farther down, now look at verse 33. Starting in verse 32, it says, "Now Gideon, the son of Joash, died at a good old age and was buried in the tomb of Joash's father in Ophrah of the Abiezrites. And so it was, as soon as Gideon was dead, that the children of Israel again played the harlot with the Baals and made Baal Beareth their god." So here we go. This is the ongoing cycle that the children of Israel went through all during the time of the judges. And if you know more about the history of Israel, this is the way their history was all through also the time of the kings. All through their history, they were the same way. And so they did not remember Gideon. And even though he reigned for 40 years, Gideon's influence did not last hardly at all after he was gone. And so it's a very sad thing on the children of Israel. Now, beginning in chapter 9, we see the next judge that's coming up, and his name is Abimelech. Chapter 9 speaks of his life. Though we usually name him as one of the judges, he was not a deliverer of Israel in any way. He was not really a judge. He was a wicked son of Gideon who set himself up as a king in the city in the area of Shechem. He was the son of a concubine that Gideon had had who lived in Shechem, even though Gideon didn't really reside in that area for any length of time. So as Abimelech grew up and got older, he developed this reputation as Gideon's son and became very strong in the area of Shechem. And he was promoting himself to the men of Shechem. And yet he was a very wicked man because he wanted to rule everyone. He wanted the whole nation of Israel. He wanted to be a judge over everyone. And he was willing to do anything about it. And we can see that in one of the scriptures it talks about Gideon having 70 sons. He was married quite a number of times, and he had a great amount of children, 70 sons that could have ruled in his father's place. And Abimelech, with the help of the men of Shechem, went out and hired them with wicked money to kill those other brothers of him, and they did it. Killed all 70 of Gideon's sons. And the only one that made it through alive was a son named Jothan. In chapter 9, verses 22 through 26, it talks about the rule and reign of Abimelech. And it says, after Abimelech had reigned over Israel 3 years, God sent a spirit of ill will between Abimelech and the men of Shechem, and the men of Shechem dealt treacherously with Abimelech, that the crime done to the 70 sons of Jerubbaal, who is Gideon, might be settled, and their blood be laid on Abimelech, their brother, who killed them, and on the men of Shechem, who aided him in killing of his brothers. And the men of Shechem sent men in ambush against him on the tops of the mountains, and they robbed all who passed by them along the way, and it was told to Abimelech. All right, so we can see here that now Abimelech is in trouble. He's got a problem because now his own men and people are turning against him. And Abimelech, through the rest of chapter 9, is fighting with these same men who we just read about, who are supposedly the people in the area where he's supposed to be popular. And eventually, he is killed in a battle in trying to fight with one of the towns that he has enemies in and is having problems with. And it says in verse 56, thus God repaid the wickedness of Abimelech, which he had done to his father by killing his 70 brothers. And all the evil of the men of Shechem, God returned on their own heads, and on them came the curse of Jothan, the son of Jerubbaal. Jerubbaal was another name for Gideon. But Jothan, when he became a little bit older, he had to continue to run from Abimelech, because even after his years, Abimelech is trying to kill Jotham, because naturally he's next in line to be a ruler in Israel. And Jotham puts this curse upon Abimelech and the men who helped him and the men of Shechem. And Jotham, being like his father Gideon, is blessed by God, and God helps him to overcome his problems, even though he has to hide from Abimelech. And God blesses him and curses Abimelech. In chapter 10, we can see that after Abimelech, there arose to save Israel, Tola, the son of Pua, the son of Dodo, a man of Issachar, and he dwelt in Shamir in the mountains of Ephraim. He judged Israel 23 years, and he died and was buried in Shamir. Okay, so that's the next judge that we have, named Tola, and this is really all the information that we have about him. The next one was named Jair. In verse 3 it says, after him arose Jair, a Gileadite, and he judged Israel 22 years. Now he had 30 sons who rode on 30 donkeys. They also had 30 towns which are called Havoth-Jair to this day, which are in the land of Gilead. And Jair died and was buried in Kamon. So here's the two instances where, even though these two men ruled for over 20 years, there's very, very little spoken of them in the Scripture. Almost nothing. And so they are mentioned as being judges and rulers in Israel, And yet God chose in the giving us this information not to give us any more than this short amount of information on these two judges. In chapter 10, again, in verses 8 and 9, it says, from that year, in verse 6 it says, the children of Israel again did evil in the sight of the Lord and served the Baals and the Ashtaroths, the gods of Syria, the gods of Sidon, the gods of Moab, the gods of the people of Ammon, and the gods of the Philistines, and they forsook the Lord and did not serve him. So the anger of the Lord was hot against Israel, and he sold them into the hands of the Philistines and into the hands of the people of Ammon. For that year they harassed and oppressed the children of Israel for 18 years. All the children of Israel who were on the other side of the Jordan in the land of the Amorites in Gilead. And the children of Israel cried out to the Lord, saying, we have sinned against you, because we have both forsaken our God and served the Baals. So the Lord said to the children of Israel, did I not deliver you from the Egyptians and from the Amorites and from the people of Ammon and from the Philistines, also the Sidonians and the Amalekites and the Maonites? Oppressed you, and you cried out to me, and I delivered you from their hand. Yet you have forsaken me and served other gods. Therefore I will deliver you no more. Go and cry out to the gods which you have chosen. Let them deliver you in your time of distress. So in this time of distress, God had had enough with the children of Israel. And yet he always seemed to try and help them whenever he could. He tried to get them through prophets and through talking to his servants to try and get them to do what was right. He always showed his love to them. And then it says in verse 15, and the children of Israel said to the Lord, we have sinned. Do to us whatever seems best to you, only deliver us this day, we pray. So they put away the foreign gods from among them and served the Lord, and his soul could no longer endure the misery of Israel. So again, God has a soft heart. And even though God is totally disgusted with the way they were, fed up with the way they are, and telling them that I'm not going to help you anymore, their misery softened his heart. And it shows us an example of really what God was really like and is really like with us today too. In verse 17 it says, the people of Ammon gathered together and encamped in Gilead, and the children of Israel assembled together and encamped in Mizpah. And the people, the leaders of Gilead, said to one another, who is the man who will begin the fight against people of Ammon? He shall be head over all the inhabitants of Gilead. And now we go into the story of the next judge. And their problem is with the Ammonites and the Philistines, which were two very, very powerful groups of people who were within their borders and always causing them trouble. And they meant to establish themselves and stay in their homelands that they had lost before and yet regained because of children of Israel's sinfulness. And yet they continued to fight against the nation of Israel and win. And so then God sends them a man named Jephthah. Jephthah was a mighty man of valor. He was a son of a man named Gilead, but he was the son of a harlot. One of his wives had been a harlot. Gilead was a great man, and there was also a city in an area named Gilead, and we can read about it in chapter 11, verses 1 through 3. Now Jephthah the Gileadite was a mighty man of valor, but he was the son of a harlot, and Gilead begot Jephthah. Gilead's wife bore sons, and when his wife's sons grew up, they drove Jephthah out and said to him, "You shall have no inheritance in our father's house, for you are the son of another woman." Then Jephthah fled from his brothers and dwelt in the land of Tob. And the worthless men banded together with Jephthah and went out raiding with him. So Jephthah's mother had brought reproach upon him and his father, obviously. But the people didn't look down upon him because he was the son of a harlot. So he ran away, as it says in the scriptures, and he went to Tob, which was an area that we think was near Damascus, up in near Syria and up north, and that was called the land of Tob at one time. And that was where his mother had come from. So Jephthah stayed up in that area and lived there until this great persecution and problem with the Philistines and the Ammonites came about, and the oppression that they put on his home and his people. And because of this, the people were desperate for a leader, and they turned to Jephthah, went after him, and brought him back to Israel and begged him to help them. And through chapter 11, it discusses the history of the conflict that had gone on between the Israelites and the Ammonites. And Jephthah tries to explain to the people of Ammon in a peaceful way that they should let the children of Israel have the land that God had given to them. That God had blessed them and given them this land, and the people of Ammon should be willing to give up this land for these reasons. He tries to reason with the king of Ammon to avoid the wars and conflicts that they were about to be in. And in verse 28 of chapter 11, it says, "However, the king of the people of Ammon did not heed the words which Jephthah sent to him." So we can read in 11:32 and 33 that Jephthah advanced toward the people of Ammon to fight against them, and the Lord delivered them into his hands. And he defeated them from Aroer as far as Minnith, 20 cities, and to Abel-Karamin with a great slaughter. Thus the people of Ammon were subdued before the children of Israel. In chapter 11, verses 30 through 40, we can see one of the problems of Jephthah, his vow. And the bell just rang, and so we only have a few minutes. But I'm going to read here what Jephthah did here. In verse 29, it says, "Then the Spirit of the Lord came upon Jephthah, and he passed through Gilead and Manasseh, and passed through Mizpah and Gilead. And from Mizpah of Gilead he advanced toward the people of Ammon. And Jephthah made a vow to the Lord and said, 'If you will indeed deliver the people of Ammon into my hands, then it will be that whatever comes out of the doors of my house to meet me when I return in peace from the people of Ammon shall surely be the Lord's, and I will offer it up as a burnt offering.'" So we read that Jephthah advanced toward the people and he defeated the people of Ammon. And in verse 34, we drop down and it says, "Then Jephthah came to his house at Mizpah. When Jephthah came to his house in Mizpah, there was his daughter coming out to meet him with timbrels and dancing, and she was his only child. Besides her, he had neither son nor daughter. And it came to pass when he saw her that he tore his clothes and said, 'Alas, my daughter, you have brought me very low. You are among those who trouble me, for I have given my word to the Lord, and I cannot go back on it. So she said to him, My father, if you have given your word to the Lord, do to me according to what has gone out of your mouth, because the Lord has avenged you and your enemies, the people of Ammon. Then she said to her father, Let this thing be done for me. Let me alone for 2 months, that I may go and wander on the mountains and bewail my virginity, my friends and I. So he said, Go. And she sent away for her he sent her away for 2 months, and she went with her friends and bewailed her virginity on the mountains. And it was so at the end of 2 months that she returned to her father, and he carried out his vow with her, which was, he had vowed. She knew no man, and it became a custom in Israel that the daughters of Israel went 4 days each year to lament the daughter of Jephthah the Gileadite. So, Jephthah had made a vow. First thing that comes out of my door when I return from this fight will be offered as a burnt offering. And the first thing that it says here that came out of his door was his only daughter. Now, there's people that want to argue about whether he really did it or not. But I can't tell you that he didn't do it. It's my reading of this scripture that you can look at it and it says very plainly that that's what he did. But people will argue and say, would God accept this burnt offering of his daughter, a human sacrifice? So there, I'm just bringing that to your attention, but I don't really agree with that kind of rationale. And so it says what it says, and I think that we have to take it for what it means. And
I think verse 40 pretty well basically backs up with what he was telling me. Because why was that the women there, they went every year, 4 days to commemorate what had happened. If she was still alive, they wouldn't have any reason to do it.
Right. That's she wouldn't have any reason to. They wouldn't have any reason to lament her in verse 40, if she had never died. And what people will say to disregard this is that she never remarried, never married, never. She kept her virginity. Well, that was her sacrifice. That she the way they can make it look like. That really was what would happen, because God would never accept a human sacrifice. And I don't think you can go that way. And so we'll stop here for now and talk a little bit more about Jephthah the next time, which is probably going to be a couple months from now. And then maybe we'll go back over this a little bit. And think about it, and if you have any questions, bring them out.